episode 554 of the Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And what is it with Edward James Olmos and hijacking carriers?
I'm just upset that the helicarrier that he has wasn't called the Galactic. Yeah. But that's just me. Yeah. Probably not just me, actually, but it is me this time. We are going to be talking about the top scored shows and the lowest scored shows of the week. And that is out of, let me count them up, 18 shows, 18 episodes across the span of the week here. And yeah, we have scores from most of the Critical Myth family here. So we've got a few surprising ones from people here as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what's very interesting to note before we get into it is that we have some shows that normally don't show up in the top and bottom.
Yes.
So yeah, and some of them are very surprising in both directions. So before we get into any more or tease any more here, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give our standard disclaimer, our standard one this time?
Yes, absolutely. We will talk about just about anything we feel like in these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled. But as always, we try and make sure that you've had at least a week or so to catch up before we do that.
That's right. And now we are going to have to change things up slightly because... we had a couple shows that came in at very high on the list, but they're shows that only one of us watches.
Yes.
And so I'm playing a little bit executive decision making here. And those shows we're going to kind of demonstrate as a tie. Okay. So kind of an A-B situation. So they're not taking up two slots. So don't worry, it'll all make sense in the end. Just go with it. All right. So why don't we go ahead and start with what is our number three show for the week. And this would be The Flash. Yes, this would be one that is almost always up towards the top. But it made it into number three slot this week. And here's the promo.
The psychopath has the capability to destroy the city.
The trickster! Are you familiar with the movie Speed? You go below 600 miles per hour.
Boom! I can't run forever!
It will blow if you stop moving.
Run, 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 run!
The Flash, all new next Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on this.
All right, and that is The Flash Season 1, Episode 17, Tricksters. A copycat killer known as the Trickster sets off bombs in Central City. In an effort to stop him, Barry and Joe seek help from the original Trickster, a criminal mastermind who has been imprisoned for 20 years in TV hell. Meanwhile, Iris asks Eddie to help with a case. In flashbacks, Harrison Wells is shown coming up with the idea for the particle accelerator, and boy, does that gloss over exactly what happened.
Yes.
This show came in at an average of 8.88.
Yeah, John, what was the problem?
Yes, my 8.5 versus all the nines that everyone gave.
Yes.
What was the problem? I'll get to that in a moment. But man, Mark Hamill.
Oh, so much fun. I also particularly love them. I mean, actually using the history and showing that as Barry put it, you know, how he was rocking the unitard back in his original appearance on back in 91. And certainly, I mean, you know, it was just a marvelous performance, and I was rather intrigued because of course he's had much success playing voicing the Joker in the Batman animated series, and there were some people who were pointing out that, you know, well, actually, you know, his original Trickster is kind of very similar to what he was doing with the Joker, so you know, there is kind of a continuum going on there of Trickster fed into Joker, which you know, because kept him in the public eye, and you know, now he's back to being the Trickster again. So and of course, you know, in terms of them going just slightly meta, of course, that moment when he tells his protege that he is his father.
Yes, you saw it coming a mile away.
Oh, absolutely.
Away.
It was like, you know, sort of sitting there going like, are you really going to? Oh, yes, you are. Okay.
It was one step away from staring right at the camera and grinning.
Yes.
And it would have been glorious. But yeah, wow. I'm sorry Gary's not here, because I've got to think that he would be gushing over the fact that, as a fan of the show back in the 90s, the fact that they actually referenced it, however, you know, tongue in cheek that they did so.
Yeah.
But I think I wrote up in my review that if we didn't know that it wasn't a sequel or successor to that original show, this would have been probably one of the coolest ways to actually link them together. Because this goes as close to that kind of linkage as you can get without actually going over the line. And he stole the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was really nothing else that had to happen in that episode. And what really pushed it over the edge for me into above average territory, maybe not quite as far as you guys, but it did put me pretty close, was the fact that they still had the compelling subplot where you learned that there was, in fact, a Harrison Wells.
Yes.
And Eobard Thawne went in there and...
Yes, and apparently has been filching technology from the mirror universe.
Yes, exactly. So it was a nice touch there too, but more to the point is that it was another reflection of this whole trickster idea, and I really liked that as well. Other things that came to mind is that between the previous episode and this episode, you see Barry and the villains involved. They're over the top a bit. They're chewing the scenery a bit, but it's knowingly doing so.
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost image management, which is really an interesting thing. And I almost want them to play with it more, because it's like the trickster in this episode is playing up things in a specific way to manipulate people.
Yes,
it's not that he's crazy. He's playing crazy he is crazy, but he's playing with expectation in order to get what he wants. And I kind of love the idea that there's self-awareness in these characters. They're not just being put out there and totally playing it straight that they are in fact, villains in costume or whatever. They understand the absurdity of what's going on and they're playing with it. They use it to their advantage. And, my point there was that this being an extension of Arrow, there has to still be that kind of grounded approach to what's going on in universe, even though it's the Flash, and obviously there's superpowers involved and all of that. But this is the kind of thing that you could imagine a villain in Arrow doing.
Mm-hmm.
Managing their own, PR.
Yes. Yes.
And stuff. And that's what I find works so well. Even as Arrow is doing stuff with League of Assassins, which is being played very straight, but not without its own spin on this whole thing. The more flashy villains, no pun intended, are being more, media savvy. And it's just a really interesting, subtext to all of this. But what, I guess, before I get into what kind of took away from a little bit from this episode for me, I mean, what are your thoughts on other things that worked in this episode?
Actually, I think we can shift to what was probably, because as we're talking it over, I mean, what sort of is... really popping back into my head that, and what kept me from rating it higher, even though obviously, I gave it a 9. I thought it was very, very good, but certainly the whole situation with Iris is just to be getting more and more problematic, especially now that we have, yes, everybody knows who Barry is except for Iris, and they're deliberately lying to her. And, it just seems, it's been a bit of a problematic character, and, this is not doing her any favors to, have her still kept in that box while everyone else is running around knowing what's going on.
Oh, that's one thing for sure. But what bothered me is the speed, again, no pun intended, at which Barry is figuring out that Wells is a villain. It's happening over literally 2 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's way too fast. I understand it's the speed of plot.
Yeah.
And that's what's driving this. But that's, to me, the problem. It's too quick. It's strains credibility, and I know that saying that for a show like this is a little absurd on its own face, but yeah, it's pushing it a little too quick. And for me, I'm losing something in that translation. Like, it's taking a little bit off the top for me. But and never mind the fact that there were other things that he could have picked up on as the reason why he is suspecting Wells, other than things that he's actually using as his reason for suspecting him. It's like it's not adding up. Because they're trying too hard to make it go fast.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly see, it's certainly aware of the how quickly it's been happening. But part of me also did kind of like that it was one of the elements from the time shift, the fact that Barry knew that Mason had something, and then in the new timeline, having it shift from Sisko being killed to him taking out Mason being part of what tips him off. I've been more willing to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt for that element of it. I do take the point, and I was sort of realizing that, because I was going to say, Joe's has had his issues with him, but of course he wasn't letting Barry in on that. It wasn't like they were having this running battle about, how can you really trust this guy? Joe's doing it all behind Barry's back. So I can take the point that there were better ways they could have teased this out.
Oh, there you go. Anything else that you want to say about this episode? Because I think we've kind of sung its praises quite a bit here.
Yeah, I think we've got it pretty well covered.
All right. Well, then we're going to move into what is our second place tie, quite literally.
Yeah.
Rather than run promos, we'll just kind of go through these. But the first one is coming in slot 2A. Vikings, Season 3, Episode 6, Born Again. Rollo contemplates the Seer's prophecy regarding his destiny, while Koff arrives in Katakat and joins the Viking fleet as the raiders prepare to sail up the Seine for Paris.
Ah.
Yes, oh boy. Later, babies are born to both Porin and Judith. Æthelstan tells Ragnar of his reconnection to his Christian faith.
Ah.
Floki divines that a sign from the gods means a sacrifice is in order. Gee, I wonder what that could have meant. This is the kind of anticipated mid-season culmination of everything that Floki was getting upset about in terms of them not following the will of the gods and being too willing to bow down to Christian allies and so forth. He has never liked Æthelstan. Æthelstan has always struggled with giving up his faith in order to survive in the Viking world. He has a vision, so to speak, a revelation, an epiphany that takes him right back to his Christian faith. And sure enough, as one would expect, given the beating you over the head metaphor, that still worked perfectly well. His faith was restored. And sure enough, that meant he had to be the paschal sacrifice of the show. kind of perfect timing, really, for this to be going.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
In this season. And they had to do this before they went to Paris. I mean, there was really no way around it. But the fact that this is going to have such a profound effect on Ragnar, because Ragnar really favored Æthelstan as a person. And I think that it's going to put a rift between Ragnar and Floki that has not been there before. It was a ruse in the second season that they used to pretend that there was a rift there in order to undermine an enemy, King Horik. But the real thing could happen here because of this. And never mind the fact that King Ecgbert, who has already betrayed the Vikings without the Ragnar quite knowing all the details, he always had a fondness for Æthelstan as well. And that was the other side of this that is not mentioned anywhere in here. Other than the fact that Judith's baby was born. The fact that it was not the prince's son and that it was someone else's, they had an extended public torture scene where they cut off her ear.
Oof.
And were threatening to cut off her nose all as she was screaming for mercy. It was really quite gut-wrenching to kind of watch this play out, but it was authentic because it's something that would have happened. But as soon as she revealed that Æthelstan was the father, the king pardoned her. So that's kind of an indication that when he finds out that Æthelstan is dead, any kind of lingering alliance or rapport with Ragnar will be well out of scope, to say the least. So things are heating up on Vikings, and I'm kind of glad Gary's not here, so I won't spoil him on all these things, because I think he needs to get back on the wagon.
Yes, he does.
This season did start off a little rough, but they are well back on track. But that only makes them in a tie at a 9 from me on this one, with the show that you also gave a 9, Edmund.
Yes, and that would be Better Call Saul, Season 1, Episode 9, Pimento. Chuck urges Jimmy to accept a harsh truth. Meanwhile, a deal threatens to go off the rails when Mike's ability to complete a job is called into question. This was really working on a couple of different fronts. I mean, after we've had the episode that really focused on Jonathan Banks and Mike Erman Traub, and of course many of the other episodes focusing on Jimmy as he currently still is. This was one where it was picking up both threads, the Mike thread was just another absolutely astonishing scene from Jonathan Banks, where he's decided to start doing some of that shadier off the book stuff that had been presented to him, go out as a security detail, meets these two other guys, and then once the employer shows up, just has an absolutely amazing scene where he takes out the other two after one of the guys starts ribbing him about not having brought a gun, and Mike basically says, "Well, okay, if I need a gun, I'll just take one of yours," and then proceeds to do so. Meanwhile, on the Jimmy front, we are getting closer and closer to him becoming Saul, because this was the episode where when it seemed like his brother was starting to come back into his own and they were forming a bond, everything blew up. So it was a very nice mix of the continued sort of character work and family drama and workplace drama going on with his old law firm and basically winding up burning some of those bridges, and giving us a little taste of Mike getting closer and closer to being the enforcer and right-hand man that we saw him as in Breaking Bad, especially since this guy who was employing him was like an extremely low-rent kind of version of Walter White, this nebbishy guy selling pills to drug dealers. And also certainly it was giving us a little bit of a sense of why Mike viewed Walter with a little bit of disdain when he first came across him. Having dealt with some of these rather ineffectual characters before, makes that a little bit more understandable now. But this series just has completely come into its own, we are actually, I'm afraid, it was one of the, like with its predecessor, it is one of those shorter first seasons, not quite as short as Breaking Bad's, but we are coming up on the season finale in this next week, so I'm looking forward to seeing where they bring things, how things come to a head, but also disappointed that now I'm gonna have to wait till next season to see more.
Yes, so it would seem. So Better Call Saul continues to rise up the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
It is now leapt over 24 Live Another Day to now be in a tie with Agent Carter in our top 10.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other interesting things happening at the very top of our list in our top 3 right now.
Okay.
That I think will be some fun to talk about as we go along here. But one of those shows is definitely showing an improvement season to season here, and just delivered, based on our scores alone, the best episode of its existence. Not to play this up too much, guys, but there we are. Our number one show, beating out The Flash, who has been a contender all this time, and even Better Call Saul, beating out Better Call Saul. Mm-hmm. Come on. Yes, it did. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And here's the promo.
Just tell me who you're working for.
There's no need for the gun. I can explain. Can't wait.
The mutiny begins in the episode you never thought you'd see.
I didn't want this.
As S.H.I.E.L.D. faces the ultimate takedown.
You need to run now. They're coming for you.
New Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. next Tuesday at 9, 8 Central on ABC.
All right, and that's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 2, Episode 15, One Door Closes. Skye wrestles with her new powers and makes a life-altering decision. Meanwhile, unexpected revelations bring surprising conflict to Agent Coulson and the team. And this episode came in at an average of 9.25. That's one of the highest scored episodes since we have been expanding the number of people who are whose scores count towards the averages. This is obviously a banner episode for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I did go back to see through all of these episodes, had we had one that was this universally praised? And no, this one knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Beating out even the episodes that encompassed the turn with Ward and Hydra last season. So that tells you a little something. People took to this episode big time.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that part of that is the fact that it did harken back to the Hydra reveal. It was also action-packed with lots of betrayals, lots of philosophical battles along the way, and also just the fact that a lot of the damage is self-inflicted, especially when it comes to Skye and how she and the decisions that she's making based on how she's been treated. I really like where they're going here. This was almost the flawless episode. But Edmund, I'll go ahead and let you add your two cents into this one.
Yeah, no, well, certainly. I mean, it was. I think that just the way this was sort of culminating. I mean, the whole Mac and Bobby arc inside of things, and this whole. But what really made it work so well was the way they've introduced Real S.H.I.E.L.D. and this whole concept that even though we've been following the Coulson crew and so naturally I have a certain amount of of empathy and sympathy for them, but certainly all of the points that were being made in terms of why he might not be the best person, or why there might be suspicions about exactly where his loyalties or influence might lie, I thought was just extremely well done. So this wasn't a case of you just have an out and out villain and adversary coming in, but the way it was teasing out the whole question of which way should S.H.I.E.L.D. go, and perhaps we should be a little more democratic and open to other voices and get away from the way Fury would be so secretive and says setting up all of these different tracks that didn't necessarily know what the other one was doing. So but as you say, at the same time, I mean, particularly of course in the flashback to the carrier on the day everything fell apart, doing some really fine action work, and just some very exciting stuff, a pretty stellar mix of entertainment, and some solid complications, that were beyond the usual just a comic book good guy, bad guy. Skye's storyline is playing out as well. I mean, with the Inhumans making their presence felt, of course, Skye having her first run in with what she actually might be capable of, which could see how that could be a little confusing and scary, and maybe it would be a good idea to go and hang out with some of your own and
but not just her own.
Yes,
because where is her father?
Mm-hmm.
With them.
Well, yes.
And so is Reyna at this point. So we have Skye perhaps aligning with people that S.H.I.E.L.D. never in a million years would have wanted her to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's really going to be a test of where she stands right now, which is very interesting in light of everything that Ward was trying to do to convince her that they were really on the same page last season. But I do want to go back to, yes, the day S.H.I.E.L.D. fell, but that opening sequence with Bobby. Oh, wow.
Yes.
It's hard not to fall in love with her. Hunter, I'm right there with you, man.
Yes.
Because that's as close to having Black Widow on the show as you're ever going to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so let's see. Beyond that, yeah, we had the kind of the other story, the other side of the story with what was going on that day. That was good to see. And like you said, really, it comes down to this whole idea that while Coulson is being stubborn in not listening to why people who are still in S.H.I.E.L.D. would want to maybe change the leadership style, it's a really well made point. Fury's way of doing things fed into Hydra's ability to take control.
Right.
And they didn't have to work at it. Fury's methodology actually let them do things without having to lift a finger. Because as Gonzalez says in this episode, Fury, Operation Insight was Fury's idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So to think then, if you look at it from that perspective, for Coulson to be the hand-picked successor, essentially following in Fury's footsteps, yeah, there's a reason for them to be concerned. But where I think Gonzalez is falling here is that the natural way to kind of reach out and bridge the gap would have been to simply extend an olive branch to Coulson right at the start, when Coulson was still trying to figure out how to do this after last season, and say, hey, why don't we work together? And it might have worked, but the fact is that Gonzalez doesn't want to have anything to do with Coulson because of the whole quote-unquote contamination problem. It actually reminds me back during the Farscape days of, you know, the Sebastians, and you've been what was the word that they used? Like, something contaminated, but yeah, like irretrievably yeah. contaminated or something like yeah. that. And it's the same kind of idea. It's like, well, you've got alien blood in your veins. I can't trust you. And it's everything that we've seen Simmons aligning with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a concern. But now you've got an entire organization that's feeling that way. And I could see people like, you know, Mac maybe questioning whether he should be following Gonzalez or Coulson. Mm-hmm. I can see Simmons wondering the same thing.
Yes, definitely.
I can see Bobby kind of being on either side, but she's so much of a loyal soldier that I think she would have a harder time moving over to Coulson's side. But she's been in his organization. So all the things that Gonzalez is saying about him, she knows it's not true.
Right.
So there, really, it's not as clear-cut a situation where it's like one side against the other. Like you said, you could see a mixture very quickly take place. And yeah, these are all the reasons that I really loved it. You know, Gary gave it a 9.5, but made the joke that, you know, Adama never would have put up with Bobby's insubordination. He would have shot her himself. Good point.
Yes.
But she does look fetching in a, you know, cat suit. So kind of like Adama was always soft on Starbuck. Mm-hmm. I can see Gonzalez being soft on Bobby.
Yes.
Especially when she comes bounding in like a Valkyrie. Yeah. So these are all the things that I think worked really well for the episode. I think we all agree that this was a really strong episode. Like I said, it was the strongest so far up to this point for the series.
Yep.
And this means, just to put this in context, it's currently our number 3 show. Beating out still Better Call Saul a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the interesting part. It is 0.04 of a point away from eclipsing Person of Interest this season.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well.
Because basically they were about, you know, they were well over a half a point away, but each of them has gone a third of a point in the opposing directions.
Yes.
And they're meeting in the middle right now. So now we're going to have a battle between these two shows that are, you know, currently, you know, vying for second place, between one show that is struggling because they lost a really important part of their ensemble,
mm-hmm.
versus a show that is hitting their late season stride.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, we're gonna have a battle. This is what it's all about. This is why I keep the scores.
Yep.
And meanwhile, we've got two shows here that you know, Agent Carter is done and is definitely in the top 5 right now. But we've got Better Call Saul coming in from, you know, in the final stretch. Will it? Mm-hmm. Leap over both of them.
Yep. And all I will say, John, is just make sure your firewalls are well reinforced, because you wouldn't want Samaritan or the Machine trying to fiddle with the numbers there. But
whichever one you prefer to call yourself.
Yes.
That Better Call Saul can be number one. Yeah. Don't worry. Our number one continues to be no challengers close right now. The Newsroom season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to keep that in mind. We're really fighting for number 2 here. But that's the kind of material that we have in the best of the week. So when we come back from our mid-show break, we're going to get into 3 shows that are currently in the bottom. And there are a couple surprises here. So stay tuned. Right, and this could actually go a little quick because these are a couple of these shows are ones that only like one of us watches. Yes. So yeah, but at any rate, let's go ahead and talk about the coming in as the third lowest score of the week. We have The Good Wife.
Yes.
Season 6, Episode 17, Undisclosed Recipients. The partners at Florek, Agos Lockhart, argue over the future of the firm. Meanwhile, the firm becomes a victim of a cyber hack after it represents a movie producer whose work is pirated on a peer-to-peer sharing website. Some of whom I'm sure we know. Anyway, I didn't say that out loud. So here we go again. Guys, third time in a row.
Mm-hmm.
We have two people who watch the show and give it a score. And they are so diametrically opposed, this time so far apart, that it delivered an average of 7.25, which is hardly bad. Mm-hmm. But by Good Wife standards, average is shockingly low. Henry came in at a 5.5. Basically, his comments boil down to he feels like the writers are unwilling to get into sufficient depth on certain plot points on the overarching story. There's too much reliance on repetitious tech-based issues. That seems to be their go-to thing, and it's becoming a bit of a trope and a crutch. And in his opinion, they've got bigger plot fish to fry. Meanwhile, Nadim gave this one a 9. Completely different opinion, saying this sets the perfect stage for a bright new chapter in Alicia's journey. You couldn't get two different, more, you know, opposed positions here. And this is what's amazing to me is that they had been in lockstep until just a couple episodes ago, and then suddenly they are completely on different pages.
Yeah, no, that's wild.
So yeah, this is where the numbers get interesting, because this show is now dropping quite a bit in the scheme of things, and was actually vying to be the highest scored or highest average scored season of the show to date, and it's now quickly dropping back, and could go back very far below where it was before last season. So it's this show is maybe at that point. There had been a point back in season 4 where people weren't even sure the show was going to get renewed.
Right.
The ratings aren't that great. Season 5, because of the season-long departure of Josh Charles,
mm-hmm.
and that revitalized the show. And now what they're doing post-Will's departure seems to be dividing the fans.
Yeah.
So, very interesting, very interesting. Now, I believe it has been renewed for season 7, so that at least is still going to happen. But this is an interesting thing to be happening here. So it's definitely, for that to be in the bottom three is a surprising result for us. We haven't seen that hardly at all. More disappointing on my end is our second lowest score here is Grimm, season 4, episode 15, Double Date. Nick and Hank investigate a one-night stand that ended in murder. Captain Renard turns to Monroe and Rosalie for help dealing with recurring episodes of phantom bleeding. Things are beginning to look up for Adeline, and Juliet makes a decision that could change the course of her relationship. This came in for me at a 7. So dead average. Right now, this whole plot line with yet another pregnancy.
Okay.
I really don't like that at all. Juliet's driving me crazy. And on top of all of that, the Vezin of the week was kind of predictable in terms of how the plot played out. Once you kind of saw where it was going right in the first act, you knew how the rest of the episode was going to go.
Yeah.
So just a run-of-the-mill episode, unfortunately. Edmund, why don't you go ahead and drop some information about our lowest scored episode of the week.
Our lowest scored episode of the week was Supernatural, Season 10, Episode 16, Paint It Black. Sam and Dean investigate a series of suicides committed by people who all killed themselves with self-administered disembowelment. The probe reveals that the victims were all members of a Catholic church and had recently given confession. Meanwhile, Crowley captures Olivette, the leader of the Grand Coven, and Rowena pleads her case to once again be allowed to practice magic freely.
Yes, and if you hadn't figured it out from that description, Rowena was a big part of this episode, and guess what?
Yeah.
When I say, okay, first of all, this episode, now here, picture this, guys. Our second lowest episode came in at a dead average 7. So when I say that this episode of Supernatural came in at a 5.25, I am not kidding that it was by far the worst episode of the week. And as much as I love Supernatural, and I do love my Supernatural, this episode was abysmal. This was terrible. Rowena was a big part of it.
Yeah.
But when I also say that Rowena was not the worst thing about this episode,
no.
I'm not kidding. There was an entire subplot about this nun or whatever that included some of the worst accents I have heard in my life on network television. And I know that it was kind of supposed to be intentional.
But
it was so dry in the way that they did it that it came across as serious. Like you were supposed to actually take it seriously when most of your episode consists of people who are delivering accents that make that sound like fingernails on a chalkboard. It's not going to end well.
Yeah.
And this did not end well. I felt bad for the main cast because they had to actually do this episode. I felt bad for Mark Shepard all season long to have to be up against Rowena all the time.
Oh, yes.
But
that's also saying something when you're saying that there were some horrible accents and you're not talking about Rowena.
Right? Okay. Now, I'm even saying the one nun that was in the past that was trying to do a Latin accent that just didn't work at all. Even the guest cast, the actress that was supposed to be the modern day, like, sexy turning Dean on, her line delivery was just way off.
Yes.
I mean, just terrible. It was like she was reading off of a cue card. And here's the piece de resistance for anyone who knows my commentary for this show for the last 3 seasons. Guess which writing duo was responsible for this crap?
Yes, and honestly, folks, you know, I mean, on some shows, I do tend to pay attention. Yeah, but with Supernatural, it does tend to always be. It's like, no, we have a horrible episode, and then we check the writers. We're not going in biased.
No, because this was an episode that almost immediately I was not paying full attention to, and that's a when it's Supernatural, and I'm kind of immediately tuning my brain out.
Yeah,
that's a bad sign. And so I did not even see who was writing this episode. And then when I went back to prepare the notes, I saw who I was. That makes so much more sense.
Yes.
It's these idiots.
But especially, I mean, all of that flashback stuff, you know, it's, aside from the fact that, you know, yes, Florence is one of my favorite cities, and, you know, so I do happen to know quite a bit about some of its history, et cetera. It wasn't just the accents, but just the line deliveries and writing. It was like, you know, no, it didn't feel like it was in the past. It was just very, very strange.
That was part of the problem. You couldn't tell.
Yeah.
As I said, I swear there were scenes where you're looking at Jared and Jensen and you're looking at their facial expressions in as they're standing in the scene, and you can just see on their face, they know this is not a good episode.
Yes.
And all they're sitting there saying, I'm being paid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being paid.
Yes.
It's
a good gig. Yeah. You know,
this is the kind of crap.
Have fun most of the time.
That happened late season X-Files.
Right. Yeah.
That made David Duchovny just say, I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what bothers me about the Carver era. The overall plot ideas and the thematic ideas, I think, are perfect. But the season arc and episodic execution is really just subpar. And I've resisted saying that too much before, but we're in the third season of this now.
Yeah, exactly.
And it happens again and again. Dude, you have got to have seen on your writing staff that these two guys cannot deliver. Let them go. Anyway. Yeah, Supernatural, you were not only the lowest scored episode this week, but you soundly deserved it. I have made a point in weeks past to say, yes, there are shows that are coming in at the lowest point, but they have been essentially an average episode compared to above average fare.
Yeah.
Not this time.
Not this time, no.
No. This is literally like series killing type of material. If this is what they had been doing all season long, I would have been terrified of the fact that they were coming back another year.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But and, you
know,
there
you
we
know,
are.
And also, you know, as we will get into next time with some of the middle shows, it's, you know, that there were some shows that had been living in this spot that have managed to get things together. So it's, it's time for Supernatural to see what they can do for their end run.
Now we'll get into this next time, but there are some surprising things about the shows in the middle this week. In particular, just how highly scored they were.
Yeah.
This was a really good week, with one glaring exception.
Yes.
But, as I said, we will get into that in our next episode. So, until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.